58 days, 12 hours, and 30 minutes. That's how long it took for Intrepid 232 to row across the Atlantic. Not only did this crew of four mums from Jersey complete what has been dubbed the world's toughest row, but they broke the world record to become the oldest female fours crew to row across an ocean. Hélène Monpetit, Rosemary Satchwell, Alison Smithhurst and Julie Brady, whose ages add up to that special 232, joined me to discuss the highs and lows of their incredible feat, from rowing through calm waters at night to unpredictable weather patterns which brought them to a standstill in those final weeks. Welcome and congratulations, first of all. It's an incredible achievement, not only to row the Atlantic, but now to receive bailiff's medals. It's fantastic. So thank you so much for coming in. And it was about 9 months since you first came in last year to talk to us all about the training and how it was going. And so I wanted to start with asking about how you felt going into the race and coming off the back of that training. Do you feel like you'd done enough? Were you prepared going into it? What were the thoughts like at the beginning?
I don't know if you can ever actually prepare yourself for rowing the Atlantic. I mean, we did what we could, given the summer that we had. The weather was quite unpredictable. And with the amount of obstacles, so rocks, etc., around Jersey, we were very limited in the windage that we could go out in. So we could only really go out and train in force 3 or very low force 4. So, no, we couldn't prepare enough for that. I mean, sometimes we had force 7, force 8 winds out there. So, but then we had no obstacles. So it's a very, very different beast, if you like.
And when you started on that race day in Canary Islands, how were you feeling then? Were you terrified? Was it something you were quite excited to get on with it after all that time?
Quite excited, actually. Yeah. It was, you know, we had 2 weeks in La Gomera, so you just want race day to come so that you can just start. Because the more you're hanging around, the more you start thinking about other things and start fiddling with things and thinking of anything else that you could do. So it was just nice to get in the boat and set off.
Mm. Although race day did change a couple of times while we were there.
Yeah, so tell me about how that happened. So it was bad weather and then it got pushed a little bit and then it was still bad weather when you started.
They wanted sufficiently clear weather that we would get away from the islands. And they had different models of wind that they were looking at the time. And you know, one would say that we could go in 2 days and then it would change. So we had meetings at 9 o'clock each morning. All of the crews have meetings at 9 o'clock each morning. And then we'd find out what the next predicted date was. Mm. So, yeah, it changed from day to day.
You have to take into account the solos, wasn't it? That was for them to be able to get off from the island. So it was really important that the wind conditions were correct for them.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess some sort of the anticipation builds in those days. And after so long, you know, gaining sponsorship and sort of getting to that start line, it must have been maybe a bit agonising with those days to keep going past.
It was the unpredictability of it. Yeah.
Fantastic. So why don't you tell me about some of the gory details I think people want to know. So firstly, the fatigue. People have been saying, how did it work with rowing two hours on, 2 hours off? Is that what you did? And how did you deal with doing that? Hélène?
So we had a bit of a rota, so you weren't rowing with the same person all the time. You got to row. So I got to row with Rosemary and Alison. I couldn't row with Julie because she was in the same cabin with me. So the idea is that whoever isn't rowing gets a chance to get some rest in the cabin by themselves. We went into 3 hours, first of all. And that was nice because then you got a full 3 hours to sleep, which was really luxurious. And then the conditions got quite extreme quite rapidly, so we felt that 3 hours on the oars was a bit too much to deal with, so we then reduced it to 2 hours on and 2 hours off. And surprisingly, I think the others will agree, I think we all adapted to that quite quickly.
Yeah. Interesting. And what kind of toll does that take on your body? Were you really tired, or did you feel like you settled into the rhythm of it?
I think we all had different experiences. Kind of felt that I had settled into it quite well, but the worst part is when your timer or alarm or whatever you've set goes off and you're thinking, oh, I'm nowhere near land, I have to get up, and you put on your wet clothes and go out in the dark. But it's initially, I suppose, the first 10 minutes after waking up. But once you're on the oars, it's absolutely fine. Nighttime was the hardest bit.
Yeah, I can imagine. Were there any instances of, you know, sleeping over alarms or people having to fill for other people?
Certain people, certain people more than others.
And you mentioned sort of not sleeping and then rowing with the same people. So throughout the journey, were there any kind of disagreements amongst yourselves or nodding your head, Julie.
There were words, but nothing that...
A few little niggles here and there, but that's just because people are tired. But there was no arguments. There was nothing horrible. There was no bad feelings or anything. Yeah. It's just the initial people are a bit tired, and it's, you know, can you hurry up and do this? And it's, you know, I'm doing my best sort of thing. And
just remember, you're on a boat that's 9 meters by one.
Mm. Yeah.
Four people. Mm. It's a tiny space for a long, long time.
Yeah. Mm.
So we did really well.
Yeah. I don't think there were any incidents that were any worse than any of the meetings we had. We talk to each other. Basically, we've spoken to each other every day.
Yeah.
You know, so...
And you're still speaking.
You're going to have... Yeah, exactly. You're going to have differences of opinion and things you need to get off your chest. So, nothing lasted long at all.
There was one incident when I thought I might fall out with Julie. She had to do number two in the bucket, and it was a bit rough. The seas were quite rough, and she fell off the bucket. and the contents of the bucket went all over my trainers.
In the footwell everywhere, it took a while to clean that all up, didn't it? Bless you.
But I got over it, it's fine.
And sort of now that you're back, do you feel like you've really bonded? Are these like a friendship that you think you'll have for life now that you've done this together?
I think so. I mean, we were good friends. Yeah. We were good friends before and we're still really good friends.
Yeah.
We probably know each other in slightly different ways, but we were, because we'd gone through a sort of three-year build-up to everything, seeing each other a lot, you know, throughout the whole campaign, we'd always taken the view that if, you know, share your feelings, share your emotions. If you're worried about something or excited about something, just talk about it to the others and just try and be as open as possible, which I think we try to adopt the whole way through the race, really.
And I don't think any of us are the sort to shy away from anything. We're just going to say it. But equally, it's an experience that the four of us will only have. We can't, you know, explain the whole thing to anybody but the best will in the world. It's something that we share and we will always have shared.
Yeah. No, it's really special as well, I think, with them. It's something that not many people have done and that you can say that you've done. And tell me about food. I think this is a question that a lot of people are asking. Firstly, where did you store it? What did you eat? And was it fresh? We heard about the egg situation. Can you tell us that story again?
On you go.
Basically most of us have to consume about 4,000 calories. I think, Helen, you're slightly...
3,000.
3,000 calories. So they're stored in lockers. So we have all our individual lockers, the actual rehydrated food. And we also have snack packs. So technically supposed to be eating 3 meals a day, but I don't think any of us managed 3 meals a day. It was too difficult to do that.
Well, you did.
So not 3 meals, no. So two meals in a snack pack. And then we bought some fresh food on board, oranges.
The oranges were amazing,
How long did those last? Was that just a week or so?
About a week. About 10 days, I think.
About a week or so.
Yeah.
Well, just over a week,
yeah.
And then you had your tomatoes, so that was quite interesting. There was a lot of bartering going on with food, which was quite interesting. It was sort of... Like, after the first week, it was like, can I have a bag of your McCoy's cheese and onion crisp? Well, what are you going to give me then?
The first barter was Percy Pigs for a bottle of Gaviscon tablets. So I had the Percy Pigs, but I needed Gaviscon. She wanted the Percy Pigs and had the Gaviscon. So that was the very first barter.
You're right.
And that was day two.
That was day two. That was right. Yeah. And then moving it. So I had six eggs left in the Gomera, so I balled those up. The first week, somehow one managed to escape in the cabin. I'm not sure how. And then there was this awful smell coming out of the cabin because it gets like really hot in the cabin. So about day three, it was just like, oh no, it's just like something not quite right here. We've got a dead mouse in there or something that's managed to creep on board. And then further explanations, we opened. Looked in the mattresses and there was just basically there's a rotten boiled sort of egg shoved in between the mattresses, just and it did really smell. So there's a lot of cleaning going on for a little while, just to try and get rid of the smell of that one. That's the story of the Ronick.
At least you could just chuck it over the side and it was gone, but the smell, I guess, stayed for a while. So tell me a bit about what you brought with you. Was there anything that you wish you'd taken that you didn't, that you sort of got halfway across the Atlantic and thought, oh gosh, we should have brought more of this or something
more sweets.
Like that? More sweets.
More sweets, yeah.
Jellies.
More jellies.
Yeah. I wish I'd got less sweets and more savoury.
And breakfast, remember?
Oh, yes, breakfast. I didn't take that many breakfasts, but I was actually fed up of jellies and sweets, and I'd wish I'd taken more savoury snacks.
Yes,
you were very generous.
Savoury biscuits.
Biscuits. I'm so delighted.
And you've brought with you the bottle of rum that went all the way across.
We had two.
Oh, you had two.
Kindly donated by the Channel Island Liqueur Company, one of which was for our own consumption, and the other one was to be rowed across to Antigua, and it's back here in Jersey now safely, and we're going to be auctioning it off to raise more funds for our charities.
Brilliant. And tell me a bit about the fundraising as well. So how are you doing with that? Is it, you know, have you raised more than you thought you would? Is it still going?
It's still going, yeah. So I think we probably couldn't say exactly how much we've raised at this stage because thankfully it's still going.
Brilliant. And you definitely hit the target that you had on your GoFundMe, I think, so that was really nice to see. And those last few days when you were really struggling, the total was going up, so that was something.
Yeah, that's good. And we did have a number of private donations where companies or people didn't necessarily want to do it through that link.
Yes.
So they either contacted us or they actually wanted to give the money direct to the charities because of the way their compliance works.
Yes.
It had to be done like that. So we'll add those into the total, but we certainly can't publicise the companies. Names that donated in that way, so we've got a few little bits of totalling to do, and then we'll be able to share that.
Lovely. I wanted to actually go through each of you one in turn, and if you could just tell me what your favourite moment of the row, if you had one. Don't know who wants to start.
Oh, that's a hard.
If there's
question,
a moment that comes to mind that thought I'm going to remember this. This is incredible.
I think for me in general it was nighttime. Mm. Nighttime rowing when. So you've got three shifts at night time because you're doing 2 hours on, 2 hours off. And it was the very first shift where it was really, really dark and the stars are out and the water is flat and you're just rowing. And it's just incredible. It's so peaceful and relaxing. It's just amazing. No land around, no light pollution, no sounds, nothing. Or we did have music on, so that was quite nice as well.
Fantastic.
One thing that really sticks to my mind is... Because, you know, for the first 10 days when it was, you know, really quite rough and really quite windy and we were thrown into it. And it was, you know, quite scary at times, quite exciting and really quite scary at times. But you were, you know, you got quite nervous, you know, hurtling over the waves or seeing these enormous waves coming to you. And I seem to remember about sort of 4 weeks in, you know, going off shift and sat there and seeing this enormous wave coming and thinking, okay, that's fine.
Bring it on.
Sort of. So for me, that was a pivotal moment thinking, do you know what? Actually, I'm balancing okay, and I'm used to it. I'm not scared by that enormous wave coming because I know that the boat is safe, and I know that it's not going to go over. That for me was a pivotal moment, realizing that actually these are enormous seas out here, and it's only taken a few weeks. And I'm now looking at that big wave, thinking that's fine.
I think for me, I'll echo Rosemary about the nighttime rowing, but the main thing for me was actually the welcome we got in Antigua when we crossed the finish line. I think that was pretty amazing.
It was a special,
we'll hold a special place in my heart, to be honest with you. All the locals came out, boat owners came out. It was really cool.
Helen?
I can probably say that going in the water, jumping in the sea, and cleaning under the boat and then having a bit of a stretch in the sea, and then looking down thinking there was 5,000 metres beneath us, I would say that's probably stuck in my mind.
The blueness of the ocean. Such a deep blue.
Was it scary as well? Because I guess sort of, you know, wildlife and things like that. Did you have trouble with any sharks?
No trouble. But we did have we think it was a swordfish that was following us for a good 4 or 5 hours. And because apparently you get some tuna or smaller fish sheltering underneath the boat, and the swordfish we believe was trying to get to them. So we were trying to shake off the fish. Yeah,
we kept
music. So we put really loud music on. It was Eye of the Tiger. And then I think Julie or someone came out of the cabin going, what the hell?
I think we're having the two of us having a disco on board.
Yeah. That was another special moment, I guess.
Yeah, that was amazing. And then we rang Barry to find out what it was. So Barry, how are you on fish?
Oh, yeah. You've mentioned music a few times now. I wondered, so you had lots of music going on in the boat. Did you have sort of a Bluetooth speaker or something?
We had two.
Oh, great. Yeah, was there a particular song that really kept you going through tough times?
Oh, we all had playlists.
Yeah.
What is it, Helen?
And some of the playlists got quite tiresome quite quickly.
Well, I have to mention the playlist that was given to us by Atlantic Campaigns. Oh, that was very entertaining.
Every crew,
we liked it.
Every crew was asked to give a song, you know, and then they put it into a playlist. And honestly, some of them were
Dominic the Donkey.
Dire.
What was your song?
Our song was "Don't Stop Me Now" by Queen. That was our little favourite song.
Brilliant.
But we had we started off with lots of 70s, 80s, and 90s playlists, which we got fed up of really quite quickly. Christmas Day, we had lots of Christmas music. And then Helene, to be fair, had the best selection of music on her Spotify list. So you just did it on shuffle. So we'd have, it wasn't a particular genre.
It was just a really, really good
mix.
But we lost it, didn't we?
Yeah, it was going really remember, well.
Remember, we lost
it. Spotify.
You've got to connect to Spotify every sort of 30 days. Mm. And
you did connect, and then you lost
connect
it again.
You did connect, and then it
got wiped out.
Oh, tragedy.
We did like Riders on the Storm.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they never let me sing. I don't know. Like, I offered to sing when we did a bit. Like,
yeah, you'd have gone overboard.
Just keep on refusing.
Give us a few bars then.
Everybody will realise.
Right, so I was going to go next into that final 10 days week, which was quite a challenging time, I think, for you guys. I know you described it as hell when you got to Antigua.
It was only because it was the... we'd been given an estimated date based on our, you know, mileage at the time and the weather conditions. So we knew that there was a Tuesday where we might get in, possibly more likely to be Wednesday, but definitely by the Friday. And then it was on the Wednesday where we were told, actually, these weather patterns are such that the wind is not good, and it's likely that you're just going to be holding ground really till about Sunday. Mm. We're like, well, we should have been finished by Friday, but now we're not really doing much till Sunday. And then on the Saturday, it's like, yep, Sunday's looking good. By Sunday morning, it might be more like Monday morning before you can really start rowing again. So we'd been on para anchor, we'd been rowing just to hold position. And that just went on. On the Monday, the weather was supposed to change, but it didn't, so we knew we wouldn't start rowing again till the Tuesday. To find out on the Wednesday that you wouldn't be rowing to the following, properly getting anyway, to the following Sunday was quite soul-destroying. But we got through it, and that was it. It was just the whole chain of that. Because it kept changing. The weather pattern was, I think, a weather pattern that the organisers hadn't really seen before. And obviously, there already were a number of boats that were in, but it's a big ocean and you're in different places at different times. Mm. There was a couple of times when, you know, if we'd got there 2 hours earlier, we might have missed a certain weather pattern, or if we'd been a couple of hours later, we'd have, you know, missed a certain pattern. And it was just one of those. And I think that...
It was very wet, wasn't it, as well? I think we ended up those last sort of 10 days, like the cabin was just absolutely...
It was a lot of rain.
The cabins are so damp.
We were saturated.
So
we didn't
damp.
Even have any dry clothes to put on.
We were just like, which
one's the least wet?
None of our clothes were dry, were they?
Yeah.
You try and wash your clothes and put them to dry.
Just mould everywhere.
It still doesn't feel dry.
So it's pretty, you know, that part was a bit...
Yeah, that was me.
And as it was going on, we were... Not that we were getting more and more injured, but you're getting more and more debilitated because you're getting more and more tired. So you're a little bit down because you're not getting anywhere. Then you're hurting yourself because some, you know, when you're on para anchor, the boat's still going like this. So you've really got to pluck up courage sometimes to go out of the cabin and think, I need to use the bucket. you know, which is what it was really. But I think then it just carried on like that. And there's a very good chance, you know, on the Thursday night, you've actually got to just keep checking the weather every hour. So checking the weather every hour. And Friday morning, the wind died down and it was just like, go for it.
Helen came and woke us up.
There was a bird. It was a little bird on deck. I'm sure it was. And I just heard this.
I can remember you saying it to me.
I poked my head out the door. Honestly,
yeah,
I'm not
no,
missing
okay.
And then, sure enough, the
looked
wind
the
had reduced, looked at the flags. And then so I went to wake up Rosemary and Alison. Knock, knock, knock. Come on, girls. Let's get this show on the road.
So we looked at each other and went,
Brilliant. Okay. Let's give it a go.
And what was it like being on para anchor? Can you explain a bit what that is? So were you just sat there or are you kind of rowing at all?
Well, we had both. Okay, both, so yeah. The most painful experience is sitting on para anchor and not being able to row, which is the norm.
Yeah, well, it's a massive parachute that you put into the sea, so it holds you in position.
So there's two lengths of rope. One is 90 metres, one is 75. You have to let all of this rope out. So you have it in a central hatch in the middle of the boat. You have to take it out. You have to set it up. You have to fix the ropes accordingly, gradually let it out. So all of this takes about 20 minutes, half an hour. That's assuming it all goes according to plan, which it did, thankfully. We were getting really good at that.
Yes, we
were. And then if it's rough and you're doing it for that reason, then you have to go to your cabins. Now, that means that the two of us are sharing a cabin and Julie and Helen are sharing a cabin. So they're fully occupied. So you're in there, like, in very close quarters in a lot of heat until the power anchor comes back up again. Then there was an incident where it was a day, I think they were getting a bit, they wanted us to come in, and we wanted to come in. We were getting really fed up. So we were rowing with the power anchor. Normally the power anchor will direct you in the direction that you're going and the rope will be taut. So the idea here was we were rowing a little bit, slacken the rope, the power anchor would go in its own direction, and then we catch up. You know, so the benefit there wasn't massive in respect of miles, because we did 2 miles in 8 hours, 2 nautical miles in 8 hours, which is a bit soul destroying. But the benefit was that we were out of the cabin and we were doing some exercise. You know, when we were in the air, and you feel as though you're doing something towards getting to your destination.
And having a routine, having that routine really helped psychologically. Yeah. But what was interesting at that time was that, so the wind was against us. However, the power anchor that was under the sea and under the water was actually drifting us towards Antigua in the correct direction. I think the organisers themselves were quite surprised.
Yeah.
It held us in that position as well, so we didn't end up...
So we could just row gently, dump along nicely.
Which was really important at the end of the day, just to have those sort of two nautical miles only for about...
Yeah.
When you think you've only had it, like, got 30, 35, it was really important, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's hard to describe that to people. I don't think they quite understand sort of the enormity of, that and us not sort of going back 5 nautical miles when you know you're that close to Antigua.
It
was agonizing. We were watching it and sort of you stuck there and then just sort of going, and then you went really far south and then ended up having to climb back
north. We were the most southerly crew. No one else went that
you
far south.
You
could
end up in the wrong country at one point.
There's not always a lot you can do about it, to be perfectly honest. You're getting pulled in certain directions because you're a little bit limited into how you can do so with the currents and the wind. And
the size of the boat.
They had some very unusual wind patterns. I don't think they normally have quite as many sort of southwesterlies.
No.
And that was quite problematic to get the boat turned and, you know, get back on course.
We're still waiting for those trade winds.
Was there ever a moment where you thought, we're not going to do this, where you thought you were going to have to tap out or call for help or get towed? I don't know, in those final few weeks, because there was just a moment where it looked like maybe it wouldn't happen. And did you ever think?
What to you it looked like?
There was a lot of talk on social media. Maybe it was wrong.
Because we weren't aware of all this.
Right, so this is funny because there was a moment where it said, you know, you might have to get a tow. And we were all really worried for you and we were like, oh goodness. But did you ever experience that moment or...?
I think individually, well, we all wanted to stop at some point. We're like, right, I've had enough, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, had something come, like you were saying yesterday, had somebody come to tow us or rescue us or whatever way they want to put it, we wouldn't have taken it.
We would have said no.
Yeah, I mean, the real difficulties came, I think, at 132 nautical miles, where we're, you know, just rowing and getting absolutely nowhere. So I think at one point I'd be down the oars and said, right, that's it, I'm done. You know, but deep in your soul, you know you're not going to. You just want to express how you feel.
The organisers, the Atlantic campaigns and the head the head safety officer, Ian Couch, would not even, unless it's a medical emergency or you're seriously going to get blown onto some rocks or some land, they don't really entertain that, to be fair. So whilst the drama's building, oh, you know, will they, won't they? Because they had that with a couple of crews, actually, when Frank came in, might have had to be rescued. But I think, you know, you've got good communications with the team on land. And, you know, they obviously track you. They know exactly where you are. and they, you know, we had to be guided more route-wise in the last sort of 6 hours because we were a lot closer to land and the wind was still against us. So they just wanted to make sure we stayed on track.
But I remember distinctively when we got to 7 miles from Antigua. Now, 7 miles you think is nothing, and normally it's nothing, and the wind did start to pick up a little bit, and Mosman was behind me, and I just looked at her, and I went, let's just hit the road, let's just get in now.
Yeah.
We're not going to let that wind stop us.
Yeah.
And that's why we went in a straight line to the finish, didn't we?
Yeah.
In fact, the
last 12, 14 miles were pretty...
they were quite suspicious how straight our line was.
No, they were. But apparently there was a couple of people going, they can't possibly be going that straight.
It was a shock after several days of sort of not much movement to see you just absolutely go and just
go. That was the determination.
And there was three of us
we went
as well.
Three up.
For the whole time.
For the whole time.
Yeah, the whole day, literally.
We weren't giving up.
No. You were like, we're making it tonight, and that's it.
But we never said it.
No, we didn't talk
about
it.
We all had it in our heads, but we never
We didn't talk about it
because
we felt it was just going to jinx it. Because we talked about it so many
Every time
times.
We said something, oh, I hope it doesn't rain, and it would start raining. Yeah. Oh, my gosh, I hope those winds the winds change.
Yeah.
I hope there's no more big waves. Then it was like the weather gods were listening to us.
Hope we
so we just never said anything.
Say anything out loud.
Hope we don't use a power anchor again. It's not like 20 times.
And so you're sat here, world record holders, which is an amazing thing to say. And I, you know, it must be weird to sort of walk around every day now knowing you're world record holders. Was that on your mind at all while you were doing it? Was it something that was...
Not really. I suppose as it built up.
Towards the end, sure.
But not at the start, it wasn't. It was just...
Just wanted to actually sort of achieve and do it.
But yeah.
But it was never the plan, you know, from the word go. What we wanted to do was row across an ocean, that was it. And then that came much later, you know. When we became aware of it, or were told about it.
Yeah. Like, oh, okay.
We could do that. Yeah.
And what kept you going throughout? I mean, because there was a lot of support from the community here on social media. It was going crazy. Was that passed on to you? Were you aware of that at the time?
Some of it, a limited amount. When we spoke to our families, we were told, oh, you've got a load of support and it's absolutely amazing. And when we spoke to Barry from Sharkbait Socials, who was doing all of our social media, you know, we had a few phone calls with him and we were quite limited to what images we could send through because it was quite difficult to get the satellite link on occasions. But what he started doing was trying to do some screenshots for us about all the messages that were coming in. I mean, it was 10% probably of what actually came in. But then when we started reading that, we thought, wow, this is absolutely amazing. And that gave us a massive lift, a huge boost.
And Peter the same.
Yeah. So, we had some people sending us images of things that people were saying. And it was really exciting. And we thought, still had no idea of the enormity of it all. But that was just a massive boost, wasn't it?
It really helped. Because
lift.
If people say you've got lots of followers, that's very subjective. You know, it could be 20 people to one person. It could be, you know, hundreds to another. I had a photo of my son
up in the cabin, and I think you had a lovely photo of Boots and your husband in the cabin.
So, yes, I had some little quotes. I had some friends who'd written them on little stickers, and I would do like a rotation of quotes on the wall in the cabin. And when I was rowing and I'd see Julie sat up in the cabin, I knew she was reading them too.
Yeah, it was nice. Yeah, it's really good. And my wife did some quotes for me as well. You'd be amazed at just like an A4 short sheet of quotes
A friend of mine wrote me a letter and on the envelope it actually said, only open this when you're having a really shitty day in the Atlantic.
What did it say? What was the quote?
It was a really nice letter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah, my husband sent me a letter as well with pictures. It was good. Yeah, and I think we actually kept each other going, you know, because we weren't all down at the same time. And I think that's important.
To be fair, I suppose people talk about the last 10 days. But there were some amazing moments as well. Oh, and we did have some really good fun out there. And quite a lot of laughs.
We did have a lot of laughs.
We saw some of the Christmas Day photos. Looked like we had a great time. And nice weather as well for that
day.
The weather was gorgeous.
The weather was really
nice. That was
nice
our first swim.
Oh, really?
Yep. Yeah, that was first swim.
Christmas Day swim.
Even out of Jersey, you can still do your Christmas Day swim.
But it was so warm. It was considerably warmer
than
Jersey. So
warm. It was surprising how warm it was.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
I don't know what temperature it was because I don't think
it would have been 20 degrees.
It would have been at least
easily
because you didn't flinch when you jumped in.
Yeah, it was nice,
and it actually got warmer. As we got across, there were sometimes when we were cleaning things out or rinsing through some utensils and your hammer gun, you think, actually, that's like a tepid bath.
Yeah, yeah.
But talking about temperatures, I had my Garmin on, it would give me the temperature, and during the daytime, so outside would be 36, 37, and I was lying in the cabin, and I looked at the temperature, it was 40 degrees inside the cabin.
And you've got to have the cabin door closed, obviously, for safety purposes as well. So,
and with yours, you have the benefit of the sunshine.
And the sunshine just drips.
We were like mushrooms.
Fantastic. So tell me what it was like to arrive finally after 58 days. Was it just relief or just you couldn't believe it?
Pure joy.
Absolute joy.
Yeah. I was delighted.
Yeah.
And we had the best welcome you could ever imagine.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah. I'm watching the videos. I mean, we were emotional, so I can't imagine what it was
like.
Yeah,
so you get locals coming up in their little fishing boats. Yeah. There's two guys in their little tender. Yeah. They were spearfishing, and they came right up to us going, well done, girls. And then loads of people on their yachts coming up to us. And it was like a little flotilla at one point.
Oh, it was amazing.
And blowing their horns and all the luxury yachts as you came in.
When we sort of came right up the channel.
Like competing with each other to be the loudest, weren't they?
Yeah. So many people
and then they were and then the bars, do you remember the bars?
Oh, the music.
They stopped eating. They were stopped eating. They all stood up and played We Are the Champions.
Yeah. People on land said, oh, he thought that was you.
And I remember I actually looked at Alison and I said, Alison, enjoy every single minute because you will never, ever have this again.
Yeah.
I remember saying that.
I was steering so I could see up in the corner the fort. These guys, unfortunately, I don't know if you could see.
We were able to see.
Yeah, no, you were rowing. So I got sort of out of the corner of my eye, all the family and all the supporters and the flags.
You saw the Jersey flags.
That was really amazing as well.
It's amazing. And I'm assuming you went straight to a bar or something to get a drink and a meal.
We got food.
Yes.
Yeah. What was the first meal?
It was burger, chips and a little bit of
salad.
It wasn't us too. It's actually provided to you by
Atlantic. And a beer. We did have a beer and water.
And how has it been sort of settling back into normal life? Is it weird to go back to sleeping full nights and things like that?
It's very strange.
It is very strange.
The sleep patterns have been quite tough to get.
Yeah. You know. Last night was my first full night's sleep.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And are you still suffering physically? Well, not suffering, but are you still tired, fatigued in your bodies, or are you getting better?
I wouldn't say tired, but I find that some of my muscles disappeared a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I do a lot of cycling normally, and I've jumped back on my bike, and I'm struggling. Like, my legs haven't got the same power. Yeah. And I think it's because for 2 months we weren't load-bearing.
Yeah.
You know, you're sitting down, you're not putting any weight on your legs, are you?
Yeah, so we're not doing cardio either.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, I cycle commute, and not particularly fast, but I found it really, really tricky. Last Tuesday was my first day on the bike, and I kept looking to see if my tyres were flat. I was thinking, this is awful. So I feel my fitness has gone down quite a bit, but that's fine.
Surprising.
It'll come back.
You'd think it would be the other way around, because you're sort of constantly rowing.
But you're not doing cardio. You're just really tapping.
It's endurance.
You're going backwards and
it's
forwards.
All endurance.
Yeah.
Endurance. It's very sort of slow and steady, isn't it?
Yeah, there was no sprinting going on that way.
No.
Oh, fantastic. And I think I wanted to end just with reflections now that you're back and you sort of had this honour and you've had the big welcome and it's all starting to settle now. What are your thoughts? Do you feel like you've changed as people? Do you feel like you've got a new perspective?
I don't think I have yet, but it might come. And, it's as you say, it's a settling down. I mean, this time last month, we were still out there. You know, so I think it'll take a little while to kind of get your head around everything that's happened. So the whole event and the welcome that we've had, the support that we've had, the medals, everything is all just buzzing around.
It's still very fresh.
Yeah. So I think it'll take,
personally, I think it'll take a little while for me to get my head around it. Yeah, I'd agree, yeah.
I'm also, we are more mature. I think if you're in your 20s and 30s and that, and you do something like that, it might actually change your outlook on, depending on how you were as a person.
Mm-hmm.
But, we're sort of, approaching 60.
Yeah.
And I think we've being more mature in years, but I don't think it would have necessarily changed us dramatically, would we?
Yeah.
I never take my kettle for granted.
That's very true.
You're a changed woman now.
Hot water. A shower and hot water, just being able to make a coffee or
there's
a cup of tea when you fancy.
You know.
Yeah, it makes you appreciate that a lot
more,
doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
And I think when we first spoke, you know, nearly a year ago, well, not quite quite as long as that, but you mentioned that you were doing this because you wanted to show sort of women of your age that you can do anything that you put your mind to. And would you say that you feel you've done that and you've shown people that you can do that?
I can't think of that many more extreme challenges that you could do.
No. I hope so. I hope it's inspired some people.
Yeah, have
I
you had people so. Come up to you and tell you that?
Yes. Yeah.
Sasha Tate and a lot of people. Yeah.
I think what was amazing down at the Royal Square was obviously we knew obviously a fair amount of people, but there were a lot of members of the public that just come out to support us, you know, sort of families with the children.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting to see that at all.
And people I hadn't seen for years.
Yeah,
same.
Amazing.
But even like go out and you go shopping and people will stop you know and just say you know well done, you've inspired me, and I'm thinking that's lovely.
Nice.
It is so lovely.
It's surreal in a lot of ways, isn't it?
You're not quite sure how to take that.
No.
I take it really well. It's very positive, but how do you arrange your face? You know what I mean? It's like
would you say? I mean, apart from rowing the Atlantic, would you say that you'd achieve what you set out to do with what you could show?
I think so, totally.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think we could have done much more.
Yeah,
I don't think so either.
we all said we would be the best version of ourselves.
Yes.
And do it to our best ability. We always said that.
And be kind to
each other. And be kind to you. And I think we kept to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd definitely say that for sure. And I think even the Facebook messages all the media messages that we've received have just been fantastic in terms of that. So you've inspired us. So those are all the messages we keep on getting all the time.
It's
absolutely fantastic. So,
and final question, what's next? Is there anything else that you've got on your mind? Challenges?
Not to that level.
No, not to that level.
I've not really thought too much about it. I'm just sort of taking things slow at the
just
moment.
Get back in my room. There's still a lot to digest.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. You know, I'm still going flying my way through all my footage that I've got, some footage on the GoPro. Mm. I'm trying to look at all that and footage on my phone. That's going to take me a while.
And
to
go through all the social media messages that we got.
Absolutely. Yes.
Going through Instagram and Facebook, because we didn't see it when we were away. Mm. So it's really lovely to actually look at the post and read all the messages.
There's a lot.
And have you look at the GoFundMe and see who's...
Yeah.
You know, we've got...
Read everything.
You know, because we've got messages on there and we've got people who we yet have to thank.
Yes.
You know? So it's not that we're ignoring people, we just haven't got to it.
We haven't got around to it.
Exactly. There's a lot still to do,
particularly
in terms of the thank yous.
Yes.
To supporters and definitely to sponsors.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, that we've still got a fair bit to do.
Yeah, we haven't forgotten about them, or we're not putting them on the back burner. We're just...
I just hope they're proud of us.
Yeah,
so do I. I think everyone's proud of you. Thank you to Helene, Rosemary, Alison and Julie for joining me on this episode of the Bailiwick podcast. Keep up with all the latest news by visiting bailiwickexpress.com or reading our sister publication, the JEP. More next week from me, Kelly Frost, and the rest of the team.